Good afternoon. Yesterday we've been discussed about the karma and the group of karma.
Joint
karma. I don't know whether it is any meaning. Please help to make it more clearer. I think from my thinking it's not, but please help to elaborate a little bit, because we...
What do you mean by joint karma?
That means a lot of people had some kind of similar karma, then they came to the same place, or even living in the same tower. For example, some years ago, there were some building crashed, and some people explained that it joins karma and make them being dead or being problem at that time. And we have to elaborate a little bit about that.
I think it's collective karma. Yeah?
We know what you mean, but what about now? Is there any joint karma now?
Like, I think yes. It what is? I don't joins. Cause that is the realities of just the concept.
What is the reality of joint karma now?
We are sitting here together for.
Sitting here together a reality. Is it Chitta, Chetasika, or Rupa? We are sitting here together.
Can you see attachment now?
I know that there is, but I cannot see.
That's why the question goes on about joint karma and on and on and on. And it will lead to other subjects instead of understanding whatever arising now.
I think maybe I can rephrase his question because it's something that we only hear in Mahayana Buddhism. So I think his question was whether this is something that was taught by the Buddha in the Pali canon.
But I think that whatever one has heard, there should be the understanding of what is it from the very beginning, just one word at a time. Otherwise, we mix them all. We don't know exactly what it is about.
Because we don't only hear it in Mahayana, we hear it from many people from many backgrounds who like the idea that now we're all here together, sitting, enjoying the beautiful scenery, so it's some kind of joint shared experience or shared karma, but it indicates no understanding of reality now. So that's why I ask, what is the reality now, which you call shared karma, like we are sitting together here. Is it a reality?
What about those three, they grow together? Those three outside? What condition?
Randomly, conditions. Then...
Anyway, I think when people ask this kind of question, they're actually asking about joint vipaka result, or is it suggested that they did something together in the past that contribute to each receiving the same result in the present? I don't know. I've never come to understand what is meant by the idea, but even receiving result at the same time, we can see that now some people may be too hot, some too cold. It doesn't mean everyone in the same situation is experiencing the same result. Some may be experiencing result of kusalagama and some of akusalagama. And when there's a disaster, such as the kind you mentioned, some may die without any painful feeling and some may have a very horrible painful feeling before death. So there's no such thing actually as experiencing the same result at the same moment.
What about the story of the Sakya? The Sakya, the second, the Buddha's family. it's the story of his family dying. They in the past they poisoned, I think, another village or country, and then the Buddha said that because of that they would die.
And what about the bomb dropped and killed many people together?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they came from different places. Shall we find out? No.
So just clarify that there is no that such realities, no that such concept.
What we know, because we've discussed it here many times, is chuti-chitta is the result of karma, painful, unpleasant bodily feeling is the result of karma. But we are sitting here together having the same experiences, or we're all in the same disaster together. Long, long stories, nothing about reality.
Did the Buddha say something along the line like people meet because of dhatu and separate because of dhatu? Right?
Like we are here now,
right,
not in
yeah.
Hanoi, shopping in green things
right,
like that.
Right.
People are associating all the time. There's nothing magical about that, is there?
And
so there must be conditions for the association to happen.
And the same tattoo is the interest on understanding.
Could we have to elaborate a little bit more about that? Atura, right? That's quite a big concept for me. I have no idea.
People have different interests. That's why they follow their own interests. Those who are interested in Dhamma find their way to listen more, understanding more. Those who are not interested in Dhamma, but interested in other things, they follow their own accumulation.
Maybe you are not familiar with the term dhatu, right? Dhatu elements. So,
like in the Buddha's time, because of some people came to listen to him because of interest to hear, other people had no interest, so they kept away. So those with interest came to listen to the Buddha and listen to him teaching. They may have been in the same room listening to the sermon, but it doesn't mean that their karma was the same or their vipaka jitas were the same, even though they were all gathered together because of that common interest.
I still confused. So what realities of that time? What reality of that time? I still...
Right now, Kunina has her own karma and vipaka, say, among us. Each one has one's own karma and vipaka.
And some of us have a slight illness, so may have a fever or stomach ache or something, even though we're together. All experiencing different vipaka. Yeah.
So what is the meaning of the tattoo? It really means, I mean, the reality of that, and object the concept. Still the concept, right?
Dhatu means element or Dhamma. So seeing is a dhatu, hearing is a dhatu, eye sense is a dhatu, visible object is a dhatu, sometimes classified in 18 ways by 18 kinds of dhatus, but it just means a reality which arises and falls away apart from Nibbana, which is also a dhatu.
So you,
which has a particular characteristic.
So just like Dhamma.
Just like Dhamma.
In order to understand the characteristic of Dhamma, Buddha taught by way of Tattu, each has its own characteristic nature to be that. Like Tattu, no one can change the nature of Tattu. Hardness is a Tattu, nobody can change its nature. So all realities are tattu, Dhamma, which has its own nature.
But in your comment about the Sakyans, I'm not sure what why you mentioned Datus or what the... Just because of... Oh, okay.
It is like reality is Datu, right? But normally thinking about human being is Datu, right? Datu of human being, animal, no.
Yeah.
It's just realities. And you're talking about 18 kind of Datus.
Okay, so in the teachings, like in the suttas, sometimes it can be a different way, but when it's by 18 kinds of Datus, then it's referring to five sense consciousnesses, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, five sense bases, five objects of sense experience, visible object, sound, taste, odor, tangible object is one, and then one Datu referring to the three other cheetahs that only experience five sense objects, and then one Datu which includes all other kinds of cheetahs, and then one Datu which refers to cheetah-seekers, subtle rupas, or nibbana. So all realities are Datus. So because karma is a Datu, vipaka is a Datu, that is why it cannot be shared. Visible object seen now cannot be the same for two kinds of seeing consciousness. The seeing that each is experiencing now is a Datu. That's why it cannot be shared, because it's not everyone in the room. It doesn't belong to anyone. Different Datus. Each moment of seeing is different. At each moment now, depending on one's own past karma, what kind of seeing or hearing will arise. It's never shared, not even from moment to moment, let alone from your consciousness to my consciousness. So when one understands about realities or dharmas or Datus, then no thought of shared karma or shared result. Even though conventionally we might say that group of people all did this terrible deed in the past, and now that group of people are all in this room together, or all those people are dying in the famine, conventionally, but in terms of reality, nothing shared. Ajahn, I'd like to discuss a little more about the incident of the lost suitcase. One of our friends lost a suitcase, and you said because of karma, result of karma, and this is what conventionally we would say. But of course we know in terms of absolute realities, there is no lost karma. There are just moments of seeing, hearing, painful bodily feeling, pleasant bodily feeling. So when you mentioned that the lost suitcase was a result of karma, would you explain a little more what you were meaning?
Any happenings will bring about the understanding of karma and vipaka. If we don't talk about losing anything at all, and when we talk about vipaka, what else can be today or whatever happens?
Because when losing something, sometimes it means there is some unpleasant result, like if one loses one's medicine, there may be some painful bodily feeling, or there may be some result that follows. But sometimes one loses something and actually there isn't any akusala vipaka. The only problem is that there is thinking with unpleasant feelings. So we don't know, just because one loses something, there may or may not be...
Makes trouble,
that's all we can say, makes trouble. But that trouble, it may just be...
Makes trouble?
May just be a lot of dosa, it may not be...
Yes, but what condition dosa? If it's not the unpleasant vipaka.
But at that moment of losing the...
We don't talk just from moment to moment, we talk about the situation. Because now, Can we talk about seeing now as vipaka, seeing, hearing, and then thinking as vipaka? Nothing to be known. But when something happens, it's time to see. But it's not time to pinpoint what moment is vipaka.
We're just saying in general that it's the result of karma, that's all. No need to pinpoint. But my point was that a little while ago, Jonathan had some illness, but actually no unpleasant, painful feeling, but still he was told some serious problem. We just assume there are
the
results of karma.
But cause that conditions such moment, that it must be karma.
Because in the sutta, also the Buddha usually say about, okay, this is the result of such and such karma in terms of situation. Is that correct?
Like when he was hit by the stone, see, vipaka, he didn't talk about seeing, hearing.
No. Yeah. But still one assumes at the moment of being hit by a stone there was some painful bodily feeling. One assumes there is
that's the way to understand
difficulty.
Vipaka in daily life, not pinpointing each moment.
Can it be said that the eight worldly conditions, the worldly conditions, the lokiya dhammas,
because,
result of?
Because they are realities, but if we don't use any worldly words at all to represent it, how can we know? One was born to what family, rich or poor family? See, we use like this. But behind that, there is a karma, which conditions that very moment.
Because in that case, well, it's really behind that general word, there's the idea that in one circumstance there's pleasant bodily feeling, another unpleasant, or actually it's referring to realities, but we just talk generally to talk about many, many results of karma, even though actually there will be some kusala and akusala vipaka.
Then can we talk about the moment when she got the new dress? After that was lost.
Yeah. Not always clear that there's
any... No need to talk about each situation.
No, because just in general only. But still it's because conventionally people say, oh, she's got a new dress, it's a result of good karma, but like now we can't even tell whether it's pleasant or unpleasant visible object, let alone when we put on a new dress. No, but the point is that it's just generally speaking.
Like the person born into a good family could have a life of a lot of illness and painful bodily experience, but still the birth into the good family is regarded, spoken of as being a result of kusala karma.
Well, because in that case it's pointing to the pleasant bodily feeling, even though we know there are many, many moments. It's like a shorthand.
Birth consciousness is only one moment, but we talk about different kinds of birth. Yeah.
Any other questions about karma?
I do.
My question is not about karma. Could you please elaborate more on nama and rupa? This morning I read your book, and I understood that rupa does not experience things. But like, why do we have to divide into groups like that? Which is thank you.
Doesn't one die alone? If you think that people die in group, what about in America, in Ceylon, in India, in China at this moment? Different places, but that is a moment of death. Can
yes.
we say together?
I think the question...
In order to understand karma, we think about birth and death. Right? And vipaka and so on. But there must be the details of each moment. Like if we think about to die in group, right? What about this moment of dying in America, China, and Japan, and here? Can we say in group at one moment?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. See? So that's not the reason to understand reality or to doubt about it, because actually what one learns is just to understand or finally experience that actually there's nothing. Otherwise, when there is something, there must be attachment. So in order to understand that actually there's nothing, just a moment ago it's gone, where is it? Where is that which is experienced a moment ago? See, if we do not have such understanding, we think that we see this person all the time. And it will lead to more and more story. Actually, nothing. Seeing arises and falls away, nothing. Hearing sound, they arise, they fall away, nothing. But their attachment, aversion, and ignorance when something appears, because not understanding what conditions they're arising. That's why we learn about realities.
So usually, is there an idea of someone doing a deed and someone getting a result?
Yes, usually.
And why is there that idea that there's someone doing a deed and someone getting a result? Why is there that idea of someone doing a deed and someone getting a result and shared karma and so on?
Because normally we try to find reason.
But why do we think like that?
Yeah, it's speculating, isn't it? Is it speculating in that case?
Is it because there's an idea of I, so it's always I do something, I get a result, I get a result together with my friends, we're sitting here together? Is that the reason?
Yes, yes.
There's the idea of I all the time, I and other people existing. And is it correct that there is I and other people?
It's not correct.
Not correct.
Yes.
So what is correct? What is true?
There's only conditioned realities.
Realities. And what are realities?
Realities of...
What are realities?
What happened in this very moment.
Okay, so what happens in this very moment?
Arising of one reality by condition.
Such as,
for example, there's people sitting in a group. And
are people sitting in group realities?
I think it is a reality, but there's no self.
So what is the reality, people sitting in group? At a moment of seeing, can seeing see people sitting in a group?
No, seeing.
At a moment of hearing, can hearing hear people sitting in a group?
No.
Can touching touch people sitting in a group?
No, so it's an idea, a concept.
It's an idea, so thinking can think about people sitting in a group?
No. Thinking
thinking can't think about it?
But it's a concept, so...
So can thinking think about a concept?
I don't think it is...
If there is no thinking now, is there any idea of people sitting in a group?
However, to recognize that people are sitting in a group, there's not only one thinking, it must be...
Many moments of thinking about ideas, so that there is the idea of people sitting in a group. So it's an idea. So is people sitting in a group a reality?
No.
It's an idea.
Yes.
So how is it possible to know what are realities?
To differentiate between is it a concept, an idea,
is seeing now a reality?
Yes, yes.
Is that which is seen, the visible object, a reality?
Seeing the visible object.
Is that which is seen, the visible object, a reality?
It's that which...
that which is seen, the visible object, is that a reality?
Yes, a visible object.
Visible object is a reality?
Yes, yes.
Is hearing a reality?
Yes.
Is sound a reality?
Yes.
People sitting in the room a reality?
No.
Like, is doubt now a reality?
Yes.
Yes.
Doubt a reality.
Doubt. Is doubt not being sure? Is that a reality?
Doubt is a reality.
Is thinking a reality?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And if there is no understanding of reality, there's always the idea of people sitting in a room, people having conversation, glasses of water. So if we want to understand the truth, we have to understand about realities. So what are namas?
Nama is the dhamma that is not the rupa, like citta, cittasika.
Okay, give us some examples of namas.
So I will take example of cittasika, rupa or...
Okay, I want to examples of namas.
Like because cittasika is one in the group of namas.
Just some examples of namas, because you asked the question about namas and rupas, so I want some examples of namas.
So nama is... is it dosa?
Dosa is nama? A nama, yes. What else?
Any cittasika, like
any
dosa.
Any cittasi, okay. Is dosa, seeing dosa. A nama?
Seeing, yes, because it's
visible object a nama?
No.
No. Yes. So what is a rupa?
Rupa is a reality that does not experience.
Such as
the visual object. Sound.
Are people sitting in the room rupa?
No.
Why not?
Because it's a concept.
Okay. So what is the reason we learn about namas and rupas, about different realities?
In order to understand that things are not self, like, yes, it happened things happen because of many subtle elements.
Because of, so daily life just consists of conditioned realities arising and falling away. Those realities which can experience an object, namas, and those realities that don't experience anything.
Yes.
Otherwise, without the understanding of these different kinds of realities, the namas and the rupas, there will always be the idea of people sitting in the room, I holding the microphone, joint karma, and all these ideas. So understanding more about realities or dharmas or elements is for the purpose of understanding that is life, just different realities, no self there at all. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes. Can I clarify a bit about my tendency to ask why? Is it because I am attached to self a lot?
Just before we go on to that, apart from namas and rupas, are there any other kinds of reality?
I don't know.
And before we heard this explanation of the teaching, we maybe thought that the eye sees,
before the ear hears.
Ear.
We think of it as maybe a physical process, but understanding things in terms of that which experiences something versus that which can only be experienced helps us to appreciate more clearly what is happening when there is seeing. Because when there is seeing, it's not a matter of the eye seeing, or it's a matter of seeing consciousness experiencing visible object. And so it's important to understand, because that is the way things are.
Understand.
So everyone has a lot of everyone has a lot of attachment to self. Carry on.
I'm expecting you to continue. Like, just my simple questions, like, is it my tendency to ask why for everything? It's an attachment.
A common tendency. A common tendency.
Yes.
Curiosity, attachment, yes. Interest. It could be anything. It could be wholesome or unwholesome or a mixture of both.
Yes.
But it's difficult to give an answer. Only you can know.
Yes, yeah, citta is what the nature of everything. Like.
Another reason could be that one has the idea that the way things work can be somehow understood by asking these questions, and that some people want to know what Buddhism says about the working of the world before they are interested in having awareness of a reality at the present moment. So they want to know how the world began and why we are born and all this sort of thing. But that is a lack of appreciation of what is beneficial to know, what is advantageous, what is helpful. Because the goal of the Buddha's teaching was not knowing how everything works. It was seeing the reality of things so that the desire for continued existence falls away.
Yes.
This was a good question, like, what is the purpose or why study about namas and rupas? And the Buddha also encouraged us to inquire and question and not just accept it, because we can learn and memorize this is nama and this is rupa, but never really understand the purpose, and it can be like memorizing any other topic.
Yes.
So I think it's good to inquire and question like you do.
Yes, thank you.
And I think back to that question, why we divide nama and rupa, I think it's very interesting because we can see that there are people who believe that this body is all there is, that this body is them. Like, is it their eyes that see? Is it their ears that hear?
Yes.
So they don't even know about nama. So, yeah. That is the enlightenment of the Buddha that shows everything, the truth.
Is the name nama and the name rupa important to know?
No, I didn't ask about the definition of rupa or namas.
So the point is, it's about understanding realities. The important point is there are two kinds of realities.
Yes,
at the present
that's what
moment.
I want to ask. Like,
and the name is actually not as important as understanding what those two kinds of reality are as they arise at the present moment.
Yes.
I have a question about nama and rupa. When seeing appears... my question is whether when there is awareness of seeing, does it appear as seeing or appear as nama? The same with hearing. Does it appear as hearing or appear as nama?
Sometimes we don't have to answer directly, right? But we just talk about that which can be known. From the question, like, what is there? Or what is here? This is a question.
So
Say, no. What is there and what is here?
Just nama and rupa.
No. I don't know nama. I don't know rupa at all. But what is here?
We live in the world of...
No, I don't know we. But what? What is here? Or what is there? No, that is thinking. It's not what. That is thinking. So what is here or what is now? Or what is there? Just what? See? Just one answer.
No, I cannot give it just answer in one word.
Because you see that if you do not think about Nama and Rupa, you can answer.
No, we live in the world of concept, and we'd like
I don't mind, but if no one has heard about the word Nama and Rupa at all, and the question is, what is there? Or what is here? Or what is it? What is the answer?
No.
You see that if no one talk about
much more simple
than
you think. Much more simple than you think.
Yeah. Because you see that it's your own understanding or misunderstanding. So in order to really understand, it needs thinking over it. Consider a lot in order to really understand what is meant by each word of the Buddha. Just one word. Must be studied carefully, not just repeat and know the name. That's not the understanding at all. So come back to when nobody knows anything about the teachings of the Buddha at all, and the question is, what is there, or what is now, or what is that? What is the answer now?
Pure concept.
I don't talk about concept or any word or anything at all. Suppose no understanding about concept, nama and rupa or anything at all, haven't heard the teachings of the Buddha at all. So when the question is, what is there? Or what is here?
Is here?
And what is it?
It's simply self.
Okay. No, just the answer is the self, right? Can the self be seen?
No. So it's when we start examining what self is.
No, I don't talk about that. I just talk to the person who has no understanding, haven't heard the teaching of the Buddhas at all. Just very common. What is there?
Answer is self.
Can the self be seen? Can the self be heard?
We think so, in general purpose.
So that is thinking about self. It's not the answer of the person who hasn't heard the teachings at all. So I would like to know the answer of the person who hasn't listened to any word of the teachings of the Buddha at all. To answer, what is it? Or what is there? Or what is now? Any answer?
So it's all involved with...
This is thinking after hearing the teachings.
Yeah.
But I'm speaking, I suppose I'm speaking to the person who hasn't heard the teachings at all. Like a child, a boy or a girl. The question is, what is here? What is there? What is that?
Thinks.
Think? Good.
A can of 7-Up.
You said think.
Things.
So
people and people and living things.
Just things. What is the thing?
So I'm saying it's just idea which we do not directly experience any of the six doors.
So the thing is that which can be seen. The thing is that which can be heard. The thing is that which can be smelled. Or the thing is that which can be tasted. or the thing is that which can be touched? Are you talking about the thing? Okay, so keep on. For that which can be seen, is a reality or not? Is real or not? Is real. Can anyone make it arise? Or it's thereby its own nature? No one can do anything at all, right? But what is seen? Now we are talking about seeing and the thing which is seen. So what is that thing which is seen?
So it's my question.
No, the answer hasn't been answered yet.
So seeing is seeing, but it never appears for me.
No. You said it's a thing, right? At moment of seeing. So what thing is there?
No, here...
No. What thing is there?
Generally, we do not say that.
But if I ask a person who said that a thing...
That's
what, okay, then change your answer. It's not a thing, so what is it? Which is seen? Which
no,
is,
generally we do not say that seeing is a thing. It's sort of a kind of experience or experiencing.
John's following up your answer. She asked you, what is here now? And you said, things. So she's asking, well, what things are here?
No,
you want to go back to seeing, but she's not coming to that yet.
Yeah, things, what I said, things are things in general terms. But what we'd like to know more precisely is...
You go beyond the question. Because the question is about the thing. What is it? When you are asked, what do you say? You say the thing, and the person don't know what thing. So they said, what is a thing that you see?
No, here, things has two meanings. When table, chair, and...
So thing, just one...
It's a thing.
Okay.
But it's a thing in general terms.
No, I just want one answer. You say that you see the thing, right? And the next question is, what is the thing that you see? So, what is the thing that you see? One word.
It's supposed to be a picture.
Too long for me. Too long. Too long.
You need to rewind about 50 years before you heard anything about a visible object and seeing consciousness.
50 years,
more than 40. So what answer would you have given back then before you heard the Dhamma? What do you see? Things. What things?
Simple. Things,
yeah, look, for example.
Give a name.
Table.
Table. What is table? This is the way to understand reality. It's your own understanding that it's clear or not. What is a table? That you tell me.
If I don't know
what a table is, please tell me what is a table.
No, that question doesn't lead anywhere. Because if we say it's a table, it's something we cannot directly experience. So different people give different answers.
But you answer table.
Just suppose you don't know anything about the Dhamma.
Somebody ask what table is?
Yes.
Give different answers. It's a flat top with four legs or four legs.
What is it?
A flat top with four legs.
Oh, I see. You tell me about shape and form. But it has to be seen. But actually, can that shape, which is broad and four legs, be seen? Or what is really seen? Which brings about the idea of four legs.
I don't know what?
Four legs.
Oh, yeah.
John is asking, can flat top and four legs actually be seen? Or is it thinking?
Yeah, it's kind of thinking.
Form.
But before that, people think that they see a table with four legs, right? Anyone in the world, after hearing the teachings of the Buddha, one begins to realize what is really be seen. What is that?
Once hearing the Dhamma, one would understand that what we see is just a concept which is extracted with the actual phenomena of seeing.
Yes, there is seeing, because without seeing there couldn't be the idea of flat top and four legs. But the idea of flat top and four legs is not the actual seeing. No, it's the thinking about what has been seen. Right.
As soon as you open your eyes, what is seen?
Yeah. So all depends on which...
No, now.
I see lots of people with
that's
the table.
That's it. But you said it before, there can be the idea of even people or table or whatever which comes later after seeing. So there must be seeing,
yeah.
Only seeing, like a flash.
Yeah.
And that which can be seen, is it real?
There is a seeing. With that actual moment of seeing, we cannot think about what is seen.
No, thinking.
Yeah.
At the moment of seeing, that which is seen, is it real?
Must be real.
So it's just that which can be seen. No idea yet. So when we talk just about seeing, we don't talk about thinking. And so before there can be the understanding that actually there's nothing is seen, only that which can be seen. So no one there at all. This is the beginning of understanding that there is no one. And then there are conditions for something arise, and then there is ignorance and attachment, and that's gone with ignorance. That's why we learn to understand the truth, the absolute truth of each moment as it is, that this moment of seeing there's no one. This is a beginning to understand the truth that actually there are only different realities, right? So now we know, beginning to understand. There is the idea of self all the time, but learn to understand what appears little by little in order to eradicate the idea of things and self from that which is seen or heard and so forth. So in the beginning, there should be the understanding what is real and what is not real. So what is seen is real. The seeing is real. Can seeing, which arises in false way, be anyone?
So going back to the original point. So
she just asked you.
So the seeing which sees that, which is seen, can that seeing be anyone?
No, it cannot be, because we are coming back to the precise moment of reality. And that reality, at this, in our case, consists of what is seen and actual phenomenon of seeing. Then it comes to my question, that is, seeing appear as seeing, or seeing appears as nama.
What is nama?
Now, to my understanding, nama is, say, take five sense doors, yeah? Then all the seeing, hearing, and tasting, touching, yeah? These are namas, which experience visual object and etc. So here, to my understanding, nama means is kind of concept which extracted from actual seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, yeah, and smelling. Or seeing appears as seeing. And in that sense, nama is just a tone. You see my point?
I think the problem is the problem of having labels for things and learning the labels and then trying to apply them to reality. Because Ajahn has just taken you through very carefully and you've said it's seen, that that experience is the visible object. What's the difference between seeing and a nama? A nama is that which experiences.
Yeah.
So you've given the answer already, because seeing is experiencing the visible object. They are just different labels. And the label is not important, it's the understanding of the reality that's important.
So the precise point I'd like to know.
After that, there will be the answer. At the end, there will be the answer for that. But before the answer, should we talk more in order to understand? And then the one who asks can answer by oneself because of understanding, instead of just answer. Serious? So what is nama?
To experience something.
So it's real, right? So it's a reality which can experience or which arises to experience only. That which arises to experience is nama. So can anyone see nama?
No, I don't think.
This will come later, but the question is, can anyone see nama?
No, we can see nama.
Can anyone hear nama? So if you don't call seeing nama, can seeing see? So seeing is the moment of the reality which sees. Is that right? Is seeing real? It is only one reality among all realities which are real. So seeing is one. So can seeing be you? Not at all. This is the point. Until seeing is not I, which can be known by Panya, develops on and on from moment to moment. Because even we talk that seeing cannot be anyone, it cannot belong to anyone. But it's only the idea, not the actual moment of when seeing arises and understanding sees it, that it's that which experience.
Okay, so I just say myself that seeing appears as seeing. Seeing doesn't appear as nama.
Why do you have to call nama?
Because that's the term we use.
Seeing is seeing. Is that enough?
Seeing. Yeah.
Seeing experiences an object. Seeing sees. Seeing's not me, not anyone.
So hearing hears.
Awareness of seeing, does the awareness know that seeing experiences an object? So then that's like knowing it's a nama, isn't it? Same thing, but it's not giving it the label.
So you are saying that I'm giving extra level of labeling.
When you say, I think you said that if there's awareness of seeing, it doesn't appear as nama. That doesn't make sense, because whether we call it seeing or call it nama, it's exactly the same. It's just that reality at that moment which experiences an object. So if there's awareness of the characteristic of that reality now, that which sees what is seen, there is understanding at that moment of what seeing is, of what nama is. So it's just the same characteristic.
But why do we use the word nama?
No, it's out of my curiosity, because, say, if one develops...
There must be reason.
Panya, yeah. Then starting to see...
Why do we call it nama?
Hearing and all these, hearing, tasting, touching. Yeah? And then there must be a common characteristic among these individual
Yes, because each one is nama. So Ajahn's saying, why do we call each one nama? Whether we're talking about seeing or hearing or dosa, each one is nama.
Oh, okay.
So why do we call it nama?
Because it's a phenomenon which experiences something.
Yes, right. So it's reality.
For, we say for convenience, nama.
How many namas are there? Now we know what nama is.
No, then we have to get into Abhidhamma. It's citta cetasika.
So how many chittas are 52 there?
52 chetasikas and 89 or 121 chittas.
Yeah.
But that knowledge doesn't help so much at the moment of experiencing, for instance, seeing as seeing.
But it begins to know. Otherwise, how can awareness arise? Because it is aware. When there's no understanding, it cannot arise at all.
Okay.
One more point. I think your question suggests that there could be awareness of, say, seeing consciousness, with the awareness knowing just that it is a reality that experiences something without knowing that it's seeing consciousness. But I don't think that could be so.
You are saying seeing is seeing. So you are saying seeing is seeing.
It's awareness of seeing. It will know that it's experiencing visible object. Yeah.
Because your question suggests that nama is something different from seeing.
No, I'm not saying in that term. Suppose somebody started seeing as seeing, hearing as hearing. Then, out of these experiences, one may able to come up some idea that, or some knowledge that, they all have the common characteristic of nama.
Of experiencing.
Yes, of experiencing, and I think it's helpful to think of them collectively, just as people keep pointing out that the word jetasikas isn't mentioned in the Sutta Pitaka. But of course, it's helpful to have a collective term for all the mental factors that are mentioned there. So likewise, it's helpful to think in terms for the intellectual understanding of the two different kinds of realities.
Okay.
As long as there isn't the idea that understanding nama is different from understanding seeing or hearing or dosa, because each one is nama. So it's not like there is the awareness of seeing and then there is something different like the awareness of nama, because at that moment of awareness, it is awareness of that characteristic of seeing, which is a nama.
Related with this issue, there is one thing I'd like to know, because when we talk about nama rupa paricheda jnana, it only involves five sense doors. And why mind door is excluded from this development of nama rupa paricheda jnana?
Before we get to that, I'm not sure if Ajahn finished her question.
Why you say involve only five?
Five? Or involve five? Because it's a distinction between nama and rupa. Mean that...
No thinking at all?
No. Just say, everybody knows that there is no such things as just pure seeing and hearing. All these processes has to be followed by the processes at the mind door. Yeah? But when we hear that nama and rupa paricheda jnana, the emphasis seems to be placed on differentiating or understanding the difference between nama and rupa. Here mean that all the sense object, and the experiencing which involves these sense object. Mean that the emphasis is placed on the understanding the phenomena which take place at the five sense door. And where is the mind door? Of course, mind door is essential to understand what we've seen here, but this is somehow, as the first level of jnana, why the experiences at the five sense door are stressed, is my question.
Like now, if there's the development of understanding, even intellectual understanding, it has to be the beginning of understanding of all kinds of realities, like we were talking about seeing, visible object, hardness, dosa, different realities, and there has to be the understanding of those realities that can experience an object, namas, and those realities that don't experience anything, rupas. Now it's just thinking intellectually in the right way for the first time about these realities to understand that no one is there, there are just different conditioned realities. But it's not enough. That understanding has to develop on and on and on until it's so firm, there's no doubt or thought about collective karma or practice or stopping anything or going anywhere. And only when it's really, really firm can it begin to condition the direct understanding of those realities. And that is the beginning of satipatthana, the direct understanding of realities. So the realities that are understood in the development of understanding are just the same realities that are understood now. When we talk about these realities, hardness, visible object, seeing, hearing, it doesn't matter what they're called, but there are just different realities. Those that experience an object, those that don't, no one there. So that it's more and more precise and more developed understanding over and over again of different realities until there is that very developed and direct understanding of those realities which are namas and those realities which are rupas. So when it is the vipassana jnana, direct understanding of realities from the development of satipatthana, all kinds of realities have to be directly understood, not just sense objects, because otherwise it's impossible to understand the difference between sense door and mind door. How can there be any understanding of namas if there is only the understanding of sense objects? How is it possible to understand seeing or hearing, which can only be known through the mind door, if only sense objects are? So all kinds of realities have to be directly understood.
All kinds of realities have to be understood, yeah? Or clearly seen, yeah? But that is sort of an ultimate goal. And the first stage of jnana is namarupa pariccheda jnana. And my question is, why the emphasis is here, the first step of seeing all the realities as they are here, why this seeing nama as nama and seeing rupa as rupa through the five sense doors
they have to be understood. Realities appearing in the mind door have to be understood, otherwise impossible to understand the distinction between namas and rupas.
Okay.
Because that distinction can only be in the mind door.
Yeah. Probably is true. But to be more precise here, nama rupa pariccheda jnana somehow imply that the precise moments or realities which we have to know is dvi pancha vijnana, actual visual object and seeing consciousness and hearing consciousness. As an interpretation, it too narrow one.
So seeing and hearing, which doorway can they be known through?
No. So take example of the eye sense, eye door. Then somehow this first stage of jnana implies that what one has to, or one's jnana has to see clearly is the moment of seeing and which experience the visual object. And in terms of Abhidhamma, it's at the moment of Chatuvijnana. So it's not either adverting consciousness or Santinana and Sampatisana and Santirana.
Is that setting a rule for the object that is the object of insight?
It's a curiosity. No. The real point I'd like to know is, why do we have to, at the very beginning, of developing jnana, we have to see nama as nama and rupa as rupa?
Like we were just discussing earlier, when there was the question about why study nama and rupa, and at first there was the idea that there were people sitting together in the room, and it's only by understanding seeing as the experiencing and visible object that's seen that there can be the understanding that actually no one is there, no one is seen, no table or surface with four legs, and it's only seeing which experiences, no one experiences. So if there is not the direct understanding of those realities which experience, such as seeing and hearing, as distinct from that which is seen, there will always be the idea of I see a table, or I see something, or I see visible object. So that's why there has to be the clear understanding not only of those realities which are experienced, such as visible object and sound, but also those realities which experience, and the distinction between them has to be very clear and firm,
then,
beginning with the intellectual understanding. That's why the understanding of the Buddha's teachings right from the very, very beginning has to be about understanding the difference between those realities and to understand them as not self. So it's not for advanced level, it's for the very beginning level.
Then my question is, again, why the emphasis is placed on the five sense doors?
I think you're placing the emphasis because it's just nama and rupa. So not limited to sense doors.
It's mostly a phenomenon of first sense door.
Nama?
Nama and rupa. The distinction between nama and rupa.
Well, they can be known separately. Nama can be known as nama, rupa as rupa.
Here we're talking of seeing, hearing, like a settler.
Well.
So why did the Buddha in the suttas, why did he start with the eye door? Why did he start with seeing an invisible object? Because what appears now, what is daily life now, what obsesses us now, what seems to appear all the time, light all the time, seeing that we're so attached to with our cameras, and what are we so interested in all day? Seeing, and then what is seen, and hearing, and what is heard. And also, when we're talking about seeing an visible object, there is that reality experiences, and that reality which is experienced. Whereas if we're talking about thinking, what is experienced is usually a concept. So the distinction is not apparent in the way it is when we talk about seeing an invisible object. What is most attachment to as soon as we wake up in the morning? Because they're seeing all day long. So when you lose your camera, why are you so concerned?
So what you are saying that it looks up here that emphasis seems to be on the experiences of the sense door. In fact, it is not. It's all part of what we call experiences.
Let's just put it this way, if the realities experienced through the sense doors and those realities which experienced through the sense doors are not understood, there won't be any Namarupa Paricheda Jnana, there won't be any direct understanding. So for those born in a Rupa Brahma realm who haven't become enlightened, no rupas, no opportunity to develop insight at all.
So, Nama Rupa Paricheda Jnana, that's not refer to the moment of actual moments of Vipancha Vijnana. Can you say that? No.
Not necessary. Because all dharmas are anatta. It can be this moment. No selection.
So when we are talking, you are talking about daily life's realities, like seeing and hearing, and we talk a lot about that. What about the Buddha's time? Also seeing, hearing. About the lives of bhikkhu. To what I've heard from the previous Dhamma talk, it's the realities is of the bhikkhu. It's also the jhana citta.
Yes.
Is that
or citta?
Jhana citta. Because at that time you they
by conditions not, they, bhikkhu, not only bhikkhu
developed jhana bhavana for the bhikkhu. The samatha bhavana, and also, at this time for today, people like ours, the lay person, the most common realities is hearing and seeing, and
what about the bhikkhu to sila?
Yes, I'm talking about the bhikkhu who...
But what about, if you said bhikkhu should, or it's only bhikkhu who have jhana and so on, what about the two sila bhikkhu?
So, the same, yeah, the...
Jhana.
Right. Right.
No rule.
So, what is the question? I think you haven't quite got to the question.
Because...
daily life, it's different
realities. But for lay people who do not practice the samatha bhavana, there is no jhana citta. So it's not the lay people's realities.
Lay people can develop samatha bhavana. It's not a practice though. It
right.
Develops as it arises. If a kusala arises in daily life,
right,
and if there is panya that knows something about the nature of the kusala jitta or the what conditions it to be kusala at that moment, that's the development of samatha.
I see. Because we think about the kind of practicing samatha,
yeah,
something like that.
So what
is your idea of the practice of samatha?
Actually, it's a samatha bhavana. I mean, not the practice. From what I understand now, it's not about practicing. It's about the development of kusala. Understanding of kusala.
And what is samatha?
Samatha is the moment where kusala is understood.
What reality is samatha?
Samatha is a kusala moment. It is a chittasika.
What chaitasika?
Pasadi.
Pasadi Chaitasika, yes. Which is calm. And when does Pasadi Chaitasika arise?
It arises at the moment of Kusala.
Any Kusala.
Any Kusala.
So at a moment of generosity, the citta is calm.
Yes.
At a moment of metta, the citta is calm. At a moment of wise reflection about, like yesterday we were talking about death, at this wise reflection about death, at that moment, the citta is calm. If there's wise reflection about elements, how what we take for self is just an idea, because really there are just different elements or dharmas arising and falling away. At that moment of wise reflection, there is calm. At a moment of understanding, intellectual understanding or direct understanding about reality, the citta is calm. And what is the higher calm or the greatest calm?
The fourth jhana?
No.
What is the highest calm?
The highest calm.
Oh, understanding.
The calm with understanding, of realities. This is higher calm, so adi sila, adi citta, adi panya, higher sila, higher calm, higher understanding. And if we're talking about samatha bhavana, what is it that leads to the development of calm in samatha bhavana when it's not understanding of realities? What is the condition for the development of calm?
Understanding of kusala.
Understanding of kusala and understanding of what calm is and understanding of how that object which is reflected on naturally conditioned. How it conditions calm in that moment.
Yes.
Is there anyone who can practice samatha bhavana?
No.
So when there's the idea of I will practice samatha bhavana, what kind of, is there any calm at that moment?
Of course not.
Just attachment and wrong understanding. So even if we're talking about samatha bhavana from the beginning, actually no one who can practice or do anything, and it also has to be with understanding from the start.
Yes, thank you.
And it just, like Ajahn just said to Dutau, it just depends on conditions, what reality arises in daily life, what is the object of understanding, whether it is someone has those accumulations to develop samatha or not. Actually,
so
it doesn't matter,
yes,
because they're just
about
conditioned realities.
It's not about going to a quiet place and sitting and doing something, right?
No understanding at all.
Thank you.
Can I?
Just trying to imitate one's idea of a monk's life or something.
Right.
Yeah. Can I just say, can I give my comment on this issue? My understanding is like this. In Akja Sutta, there are lots of examples of bhikkhu developing jhana. Yeah? And of course, their aim is not develop jhana themselves, or but develop understanding. But many of them were able to attain jhana. Yeah? It's their way of life. It's just based on their accumulation.
Yes.
They all mentioned in the suttas. It's like Olympians. Bolt. He can run 100 meters in less than 10 seconds. And when we read all these, see these Olympians, yeah? We think that we have to be, we have to run as fast as him? No, it's impossible. Yeah? So the point is not like we have to develop jhana and develop vipassana. No way. It's simply the way of life. We have our life here. At that time, nobody used the internet. No smartphones. It's their way of life. We live in this world. What are the same? Just reality. Yeah? So what can we do? We can develop with a jnana or wisdom, just as they did, yeah, at that time of Buddha. So imitating them as if we are able to develop jhana and jnana, yeah? It's like trying to run faster as both.
Good simile, good example.
I think Lan, she would like to ask some questions.
Yes. Sadhana's access to my question. That's a question from the lady. Yesterday we talked about Riddhi Sutta, and I want to ask, today in Vietnam, so many people think that Buddha uses language, Pali language, to teach for everyone can understand that. And so today, so many people in Vietnam talk that every day must be read sutta in Pali for Deva and Beta and maybe all the people around us as a relative or someone like that. And the people believe all the people, the monk who can memory all Tipitaka, and they think that the monk can memory all Tipitaka, can understand well. And when the people think one person, if in the family have a person going to be die, so the relative should really suit her to help the person, or to really suit her on hanging some Buddha picture around them to help the person have a good next night. Can you please help us to understand well about all those problems? Thank you very much.
So I think there are three points here. They're separate but maybe related. The first one is that people think that reading the Tipitaka in Pali aloud will allow beings in other realms to listen, because Pali was the language of the Buddha and he could speak to all beings in that language. So there is this belief.
For the sake of the one who recited.
Yes, this is for the sake of the other beings.
For the one who recites.
Yeah, no. According to her, because we discussed that. And the second point is that there's also the belief that at time of death, reading the suttas can help the person who's about to die. Yeah.
And very easy way.
And the third point was
about being an expert Tipitaka.
Oh, yes, the monks in Myanmar who can memorize the whole Tipitaka. They are regarded as having good understanding because of their ability to know the whole Tipitaka.
I'm quite sure that Tadao,
because he lived in a temple in Lampang, I'm sure he knew monks who were real experts in Pali and could recite the Tipitaka in Pali, so he can answer that question very easily.
I actually met and lived with him for a while. He was a Thai monk and we were able to recite 45 volumes of Tipitaka, yeah? But the point is, yeah, what's the use of reciting these things which we do not actually understand? It's worse than just understanding one passage of Buddha's words, which is far superior than reciting 45 volumes of Pali Tipitaka.
It's like being able to recite all the engineering manuals or recite all the medical textbooks or reciting all the texts in Pali without any understanding. It's totally, totally useless. I remember we went on a trip to Myanmar, and I don't know if you remember, we met, do you remember, Jan, we met the abbot of a temple, and he also could recite all the Tipitaka and Pali, was very famous, and we had a little Dharma discussion but it was clear there was no understanding at all about realities as anatta. So one can memorize all the texts in Pali and still not understand about reality as anatta at this moment. And on the point about reciting before someone dies, who can control or the last jitas of life, because it depends on past karma that will condition those last jitas. So we just help as we can, or whatever we think is useful. For some people, if they hear the Pali, it's a condition for attachment. For some people, if they hear the Pali at that time, it's a condition for dosa. Who can control the cheetahs of another? So we just help however we can, but no one knows what those cheetahs are. No one can control them at all. And in reading Pali aloud to help other beings in other realms, I think it's more precious to talk about realities, so if anyone can hear, that's fine. But we have no expectation or idea.
We should know that Pali is a vernacular, which means a local language, once spoken in India by everybody. It's very different from Sanskrit. Yeah, it's a sort of noble language. So Pali language itself doesn't have any power. When you read Pali text, it's a very simple description. No sort of flowery words, no nothing. Very precise, simple descriptions. So don't think that there is special power in the language itself. And if dying person would like to listen to Dhamma, it's better to use the language he or she understands.
Yeah. If one is speaking to someone, why not try to talk about realities in a way that is helpful for them, that they can follow? Just to recite something, there's no chance of them understanding. It's not helpful.
Did you have any
comments earlier to Dao about what we were discussing about the monks just before lunch and the duty of lay people to understand about what is appropriate? And did you have any comments to make?
No. I think even Mahayana Buddhism have different traditions. And Mahayana Buddhism practice in Japan are totally different from that practice in Vietnam. So I have no idea about their sort of sila precepts. For instance, in Japan, monks can easily marry and can have wife. Basically, it's their business. So I'm not able to say the moral conducts of the monks here. Yeah.
Just back to the question of subject of language. So we knew that when the Buddha was alive, he was teaching in Mangkadi, right? Mangkadi language. Is it the same or with Pali? The same. Okay.
This is, I think, correct. My sanya may be a bit distorted, but I can say it's true. In one passage, in one sutta, Buddha was it described that Buddha was asked by one of the monks to teach his doctrine or teachings in Sanskrit, because Sanskrit is more elaborate language. Yeah, but Buddha said no, just use Pali. Just use the daily language ordinary people use. Yeah.
So why they use two words, Mangkadi and Pali? What is the origin of the word?
I do not know the precise history, but you can regard these two are just one single language.
No, pardon. You understand the meaning of Pala and Pali, right? Please Pala.
The word Pala is just the name of the language. Just the name of the language, the Pala of Pali. This means it's like a maintain the meaning of the sound, or sattapatya, or the, what you call like a sound. Sattapanyat, what is it? Sattapanyat.
What does Pali means in Pali? What does Pala means?
It's just maintain this, maintains the sound that people talking about in Makati, to maintain the meaning of that as exactly, it not deviate to anything else. Just the name, that I mean the Pali. But the sound that the people talking about in the last time is Makati. It's like the people in the Makati language, it be in the Pali to maintain the sound in the what you call character, to compare the voice, and that is maintain the meaning of that, not to deviate to anything else. That I understand that, right? And maybe that's a chance to talk more about that.
So Pali means to keep that object, whatever, to go on. Otherwise, it's destroyed. That's why whenever you say any Pali term, Pala is try to keep it the way it is, like the children. We raise it in order that it will grow up, to keep, to maintain the meaning. Yeah. That's why the Pala is to maintain. So we call the Makati language as Pali, because it maintains the real meaning of the teachings. It keeps the truth of the meaning.
At the Buddha's time, everything was learned by heart. And when script were written, probably at Sri Lanka, time of the, sort of this century, yeah?
But they forget the term learn. They just recite.
Not. Oral tradition, and there wasn't any writing system. The first writing system in India appears about three century before the Christ. Yeah, so but of course at that time monks didn't use writing. Yeah, to retain their teaching. Yeah, and for that sake, Indians developed highly sophisticated grammar. It's unbelievable. Its depth is unbelievable. Yeah, it's Panini's grammar. I've touched on that grammar. Yeah, that the origin of my interest in linguistics. The point is that once something is described, we think that a function of writing has six functions, or writing has six functions. One of them is writing start to have its own power. So if we say something, yeah, we may think that that person is not saying correct thing, but once something is written, yeah, we believe that everything is true. Yeah. So Pali scriptures, I think the same. Everything's written, yeah, in a precise manner. So we think that it has its magical power, and that magical power help the dying person to go heaven or whatsoever. So, but it's not really true. So the language doesn't have any power. The power is in its content. Can you see?
So at the time of the Buddha, there was no written language.
No.
So at what time and how the writing system?
The first evidence of writing system in India is at
Asoka.
Asoka
time?
King. And there are two scripts, Karoshi script and Karoshi script and Brahmi script, and they all come from Middle East, Aramic
okay.
Writing. Yeah.
So the Sanskrit also.
Everything
later.
Everything was learned by heart. It's their tradition. Yeah.
Okay, last chance for any Dharma questions here. Yes, go.
Is it okay? I'd like to know the function of Potapanna. and Tadarambana.
What chanti is Vatapana? What chanti? And what chanti is the Tadarambana? They're different.
No.
Because you see that usually the process begins from Panchatuvara Vachana, and the rupa lasts longer than that. So when the javana has finished, there are two more left for the Tathalabana to experience it. That's all. By being just vipaka, like seeing or sampatichana or santirana.
Just to experience it. That's it.
Yeah.
Okay.
No meaning at all.
Ah.
It has to arise just to experience because it is vipaka conditioned by karma.
And how about Vatapana, which takes place after
Vatapana, no matter Panchadvara or Manodvara, it arises before Kusala and Akusala. It's like giving way to that which has been accumulated to arise, to be.
So, in my understanding, I feel that Vatapana is like a small boy directing, okay, now you have to go to the Aksala, now you have to go to Aksala, not like that. Eh?
No.
But somehow it...
It has no Kusala or Akusala arising with it. So it's just Ahetuka, just being conditioned to perform the function.
Yeah.
Before Kusala and Akusala can arise.
But it somehow have a function of determining, this is not a good word, sort of deciding whether following Chitta would
it
be
Kusala. It doesn't determine, it doesn't decide, it doesn't have any interest in whether it's Kusala or Akusala.
Okay.
It just prepares the way, it just makes it possible for that Kusala or Akusala to arise, which have been conditioned by prior accumulations.
There's the Manodvara Vachana Chitta, has also the name Vatapana.
At the moment when it arises through my two senses now, only.
Okay. Is there any reason why only that?
It's the same kind of chitta, but it has different function in the sense door and the mind door. When it's in the sense door, it's called Vatapana, and it makes way for the Kusala or Akusala in the sense door process, whereas when it arises in the mind door process, it makes way or prepares for the Kusala or Akusala chitta to arise in the mind door process. Each case, it's the same chitta, same kiriya chitta, same kind of chitta.
Same kind of chitta, but different function or same function? Different function.
Two functions.
One in the sense door, one in the mind.
Yes.
One is avachana, the other is Vatapana.
Okay. And Vatapana means determine on the object, right? Not deciding kusala or akusala, but
preparing or giving way, but whereas in the mind door it is averting to the object,
because
like Panchadvara Vajana averted to the object in the sense door.
Because the other one also prepare
and averts to the object.
That's why I'm trying to see the difference between the two.
Well, in the case of the sense door process, there's already been an adverting, so it couldn't advert. So I think of it as being, correctly or not, like a buffer between vipaka and kusala, akusala.
Can you elaborate on that buffer?
I hope you weren't going to ask me that.
It's just that I have read it somewhere.
I'm just repeating words that Ajahn has explained. She hasn't used that term, but she has explained that the vipaka chitta cannot be followed immediately by kusala or akusala chitta.
And why is that?
That's the way
it is. And because when it's vipaka, it's conditioned by karma, but for Vatapana, it can have either kusala object or a pleasant or unpleasant object. While the kusala vipaka experience only the pleasant object, and akusala experience only the unpleasant object. But akusala vipaka, I mean, but the vortapana can experience no matter pleasant or unpleasant object. So it's not the vipaka.
And there are a lot of, for example, if
you read in the Abhidhammata Sangaha, there are a lot of different laws about what kind of citta can follow what kind. So it's just the way it is that it needs that buffer.
By Anantara and Samanantara Pachaya.
Questions? No more questions? No more questions?
No? If you'd like to go on, we didn't mind at all.
Sorry, the Pali term, you said that Vuttapaka is the Vuttapana is Kriya Citta, but before that there are two citta, and that's also the buffering, like you said. No,
Vipaka.
That is the result citta.
So the Vuttapana is the buffer between the Vipaka cittas and the kusala or akusala, which follows. The Vipaka cittas are the result of kusala or akusala karma.
So there are three Vipaka continuously.
Three Vipaka cittas, then the Kriya citta, and then the kusala or akusala cittas.
Oh, okay. So there are three, but the at the moment of experiencing the real object, and the next one just experience the same object, same concept.
We're talking about the idle process,
yes,
sense
idle.
Door process. Mm. Each citta in that process experiences exactly the same object, same visible object, because that rupa lasts as long as 17 cheetahs. So each of those cheetahs experiences that same object.
Ah, rupa lasts long as 17
moments of cheetah.
That means the at the moment of the like eye sense as all the seeing see, and then the next moment seeing the same object physically, not the concept of the previous citta, right?
The object in the idle process is the visible object, the reality. It's exactly the same visible object for all those cittas.
I mean the rupa, same rupa.
Same rupa.
Ah, same
visible
rupa.
Object is rupa,
okay.
Same, exactly the same. Don't worry.
About the relationship between Bhavanga and Anusaya, okay? Anusaya or Asaya, okay? Make it in a very, draw a very simple picture. Yeah? There would be a series of kusala chittas or aksala chittas. One person may have a series of aksala chittas. Yeah? The other person has a series of kusala chittas. Yeah? And then there would be a lot, suppose that there are lots of bhavanga chittas. Yeah? Then there would be a kusala citta and aksala citta again. Here, asaya or anusaya of two individuals who experience these aksala or aksala cittas after the bhavanga citta are different. Can you say that? How about the actual bhavanga citta? Nothing is changed. Yeah? So how anusaya or asaya passed from the initial kusala aksara to the later kusala aksara citta?
How about memory? Memory gets passed from one citta to the next. So is that also part of your question?
Bhavanga has nothing to do with actual accumulation of asaya or anusaya?
They are just carried through, passed from one to the other.
So it's just passing information?
Yeah.
That's it. Okay.
I suppose. Well, not exactly information.
It's just like a channel, a means by which those Asya or Anusya
are carried from moment to moment. But like at a moment of seeing, all those Asya or Anusya are being carried at the moment of seeing. It doesn't affect the seeing. The seeing is still Vipaka Chitta, just because in one case there's more Akusala that is being accumulated. Greater Anusya doesn't mean the seeing is any different.
Just the same.
In other words, the first Chitta in this life, the content of the first Bhavanga Chitta in this life, and the last and the content of the last Bhavanga Chitta in this life are exactly the same.
Exactly the same. But the Asya, Anusya are being, that are carried by that Chitta, completely different. But the Chitta that arises is exactly the same.
What do you mean by content? Anusya and Asya do not affect the content of Bhavanga
Chitta. The Bhavanga is the same.
We don't talk about content of Chittas. Function.
And what about understanding now? It's lost, or where is it? Never lost.
Never lost. Yes, yes. I don't have to. Nothing is lost. Nothing is lost. Because.
So hopefully the chuti chitta in this life, even though it's exactly the same kind of chitta as the patisandhi chitta, hopefully the accumulation of understanding that is carried by that chitta is greater.
It's still difficult for me to understand about Anusaya. Is it is only with Kusala or Akusala Chitta, right?
Anusya refer to the latent tendencies of defilements. So the Anusya just refers to
defilements, not
defilements not only. Kusala. Yeah. But there's another expression, Asya, Asya, Anusya. Asya can be wholesome or unwholesome tendencies. So if in the expression Asya, Anusya, it means all kind of tendencies, wholesome or unwholesome, which are not lost, which lie dormant at each moment with each chitta ready to condition kusala or kusala to arise. Like why for us is the opportunity to understand what is heard now, but not for someone else, because of that tendency ready to condition understanding at this moment. The same with anger. Why does someone suddenly get really angry for no apparent reason? Because there is that tendency carried from chitta to chitta ready to condition that anger when time is right.
So Asaya and Anusaya are accumulated in our Kusala and Akusala chitta.
Each chitta.
Okay, each chitta.
Accumulating. Then, sorry, when they arise.
How about sort of our characteristic, individual, each person has a different characteristic, yeah, that predisposition is not affected by, not influenced by, so-called the content of Bhavanga Chitta?
Your question is whether personality is affected by Bhavanga Chitta? The karma that conditions rebirth in this life also has a role in determining the nature of the personality. That's all I know, though.
Anusaya, Asaya, accumulated in Chitta, meaning that here, Kusala, Akusala Chitta.
For example, the birth consciousness, if there is no roots, no wholesome roots, no panya, no opportunity to develop panya in that life, for example. So if the birth consciousness of Patisandhi Chitta is the birth consciousness of an ant, it will affect the kind of chittas that arise in that life, like now.
question for Ajahn. I think it's true that a person could be, say, stingy in one life and then generous in another, depending on...
I think that we better talk about the aspect. When we talk about Bhavanka, we are talking about a gitcha, not the accumulation which is there all the time. The function of gitcha. It performs a function of gitcha. What chati is that, Bhavanka? What kind of vipaka?
In our case, it's aksara.
Good.
Not aksara. But here, my question is, how about vedana? Everybody is associated with have a bhavanga with somanasa or
same vedana with consciousness.
Yes, so it could be both somanasa and...
It depends on both consciousness.
But domanasa is no possibility. Just either...
All akusala cannot be vipaka.
Yeah. Here.
Or kiriya.
So either upeka or somanasa.
Why?
Because we are born in the...
Because domanasa must be akusala.
Yeah. We are born...
It cannot be vipaka.
Clear. Having said that, this person was probably born with Padisandhi Chitta, with Upeka or Somanasa. No, it's no way to tell.
When we see someone laughing,
or exactly.
We can know that the Vedana of birth consciousness is Somanasa.
And you said something which was a little bit strange to me last year about someone who seems to always be a leader or someone who is a follower. One night, about whether it's prompted or unprompted, but it's just speculation.
So accumulation.
Different accumulation.
What is the realities of anusaya or asaya?
It's the kusala or akusala tendency, but it's dormant, so it is latent, it doesn't arise.
Anusaya is only referred to defilements, right? Latent, yes. Defilements. But for the latent tendency, can be both kusala or akusala. Latent. So still cannot understand how we can carry on from chitta to chitta.
The point is that we don't carry on anything. That's why it's difficult to understand, because there's the idea of we having tendencies and carrying on. But actually it's chitta from moment to moment. And each chitta carries all the latent tendencies and conditions the next one. All the karma, all the latent tendencies.
I found a dialogue between Ajahn and Dadao very useful about reality and not naming it. But I still have a question that I still cling. I take seeing, my seeing, and even I don't notice it, I still cling, I know, but it's so hard to understand or to know that one takes it for self.
It's usual, it's normal, the way it is. And because only Panya can know. When it's not Panya, how can it know?
That is right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you are saying that your speculation.
It's intellectual understanding about realities, but it's not yet the direct one. That's why the teachings of Buddha can be from the very beginning, Pariyatti, which will condition Patipatti, and it conditions Pativeda.
Because we talk about clinging to self, or clinging to my seeing, or wrong understanding of it as mine, but just at that moment when it arises, then it doesn't need to be in vain, like the tears. At that moment, there can be understanding even then of that. wrong understanding or that clinging to seeing at that very moment, because now we talk about it, but if it doesn't arise, it can't be known. So only when it arises at that moment can it be understood. It can be known. It depends on Panya. If there's trying to know or trying to look for it, then it will never be found.
And how long will it take in order to really understand that which experiences?
Any lives?
Yes, like the Buddha to be.
And if we do not realize, we do not understand that it takes many lives to develop satyapanya, we would never be able to develop satyapanya in our daily life.
And there will always be lots of expectation, and that's the hindrance. Thinking it should be there, thinking that one shouldn't be a beginner, trying to understand, that's the hindrance to just understanding very naturally by conditions, not trying to catch it.
But even we don't think seeing is me, we learn by intellectual understanding that there is still taking it for self, but not enough panya.
Not enough because it's only intellectual. It's
intellectual. Yeah. By intellectual understanding, we know it's not me, but we still think, my seeing.
We talk many times about awareness, right? It is aware, but when that characteristic hasn't been conditioned to arise, no one knows what is the moment of being aware and moment without awareness. Until it arises. It's like panya at different level.
And it's only it's the strong attachment which minds whether the reality now is awareness or doubt or right understanding or wrong understanding or seeing or hearing. Actually, it's just another dhamma at that moment of not understanding or attachment. So there can be understanding it even then at that time, because it's just another dhamma that arises and falls away, just like jhana, citta or any other dhamma. It's also not my not understanding or my lack of awareness. So even at that moment of thinking my lack of awareness, there can be understanding right then that it's wrong thinking at that moment.